yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Dan Dunn. Excited to be here. Coming up in just a bit, I'll be chatting with Rachel Barry, one of the world's most revered master blenders. That's right. She's got decades of experience, over 3 decades, I believe. And she currently oversees the whiskey-making operations for 3 iconic Scotch brands, Benriach, Glenglassaugh, and Glendronach. Try pronouncing that 3 times fast when you've had a little whiskey. Benriach, Glenglassaugh, and Glendronach. That's how you say it. But first, things were weird in the 1990s. For instance, back then, people thought fanny packs were cool. You remember fanny packs, right? It's like strapping on a sign that said, "Tourist here, rob me."
Fanny pack.
I look good when I wear a fanny pack. You look good when you wear a fanny pack.
It came out of nowhere, too. Wasn't even a slow build. These things just erupted on the scene, like a bad rash. One day, nobody knew what a fanny pack was. The next day, they were everywhere. Board meetings, fanny pack. Weddings, fanny pack. Funerals, you better believe it, fanny pack. It was an essential part of the uniform of every tourist, suburban dad, and misguided fashionista all over America and the world, really. And what were people stashing in these belly bags? Maps? A compass? Astronaut food? Please, you're not Magellan. You're going to fucking Sears. You're not traversing the Himalayas. Now let's talk about those colors for the fanny packs, like a nightmare on neon steroids. You got hot pink, electric blue, vomit green, urine yellow. If you truly despise humanity, you pick patterns that were capable of inducing seizures at 3 paces. I saw these things. I owned these things. They say the fanny pack was the mullet of accessories. Business in the belt, party in the pouch. But honestly, it's more like a cry for help wrapped around your waist. Nothing pairs better with acid-washed jeans and a neon windbreaker than a pouch that tells the world, "Oh yes, I've given up, and I pack snacks." And let's not forget frosted tips. Now there's a tresses trend for the ages, huh? I mean, what were we thinking? Hey, barber, make me look like I just got electrocuted and then stuck my head in a bag of flour. Just the top, though. Keep the rest normal. I mean, come on. It's hair, not a sundae. Doesn't need a topping. Now, this wasn't just a small thing either. It was everywhere. You can walk down the street without seeing some dude looking like an actual flock of seagulls just shit all over his head. And it wasn't just the youngins, mind you. Oh, no, no, no. Routinely, you'd see guys in their 40s and 50s doing it. Grown men walking around with frosted tips like they were auditioning for the world's saddest boy band. What else? Oh, yeah, I mean, little kids in the 90s, they were nuts for 4 oversized, brightly colored creatures with TVs in their bellies. They lived in a psychedelic dome that looked like it was designed by someone who thought, you know, the 60s were just too fucking subdued for me. Let's do it! That's right, talking about the Teletubbies. Watch this. And every now and then, the creepy sun baby would show up. Yeah. There was a baby's face in the sun. What the fuck? Like, every morning it rise, laughing at you like, you really watching this shit, huh? Like, what kind of Orwellian nightmare is this? The sun baby sees all. And I don't recall anybody talking about how unsettling that was at the time, but yeah. The Teletubbies' names are Tinky Winky, Dipsy, Lala, and Poe. What kind of names are these for children's TV characters? This sounds more like some hot chicks rolling on Molly that you would meet at Coachella. Straight up, though, I'm giving props to Tinky Winky. Dude was walking around with a purse like he was at Paris Fashion Week, breaking stereotypes before that was even a thing. So mad respect to you, Tinky Winky. Oh, and they ate Tubby Custard. The hell is Tubby Custard? Right? It's like someone melted a clown in a bowl. And I was going back watching some old clips, and I think we need to invent a Teletubbies-themed drink, like Tubby Tequila Sunrise or something like that. So if you got any ideas out there for a Teletubbies-themed drink, please direct them to me on my Instagram account, at The Imbiber. And I will address that on a future issue. What are these called? Episodes. That's right. Now, speaking of drinks, it's time to talk about that sparkling sensation of the 1990s, Zima. For those of you too young to remember or who may have repressed the memory due to trauma, Zima was a clear, lightly carbonated alcoholic beverage that the Coors Brewing Company burped out in 1993. Basically, Zima was training wheels for people who thought beer was too, you know, beery.
How about a Fresca?
Oh.
Ah?
Coors thought Zima was going to be a game changer. Was part of a new category they dubbed Alco Pops or Malternatives. Because nothing screams trendy like a portmanteau that makes you sound like you flunked out of the marketing program at DeVry University. Or maybe it was just because fizzy booze water for pussies who hate beer didn't fit on the label. Zima means winter in some Slavic tongue, which is fitting since it ultimately left most people feeling cold and bitter. Sad. It kicked off big, though. Especially with the younger crowd who hadn't been fully weaned off pixie sticks yet. They had this tragically unhip ad campaign featuring a dude mispronouncing S's like Z's. Nothing sells alcohol like a speech impediment, right? Here, check it out.
So this guy sits down, he goes,
nice bottle, very, what is it?
Rima.
Beer?
No, something different.
Wine cooler.
Not so sweet. Try a zip.
Zip? What's in it? Essence of Patanga. Am I right?
No!
Maybe it was a touch of a citrus?
My lips are sealed.
A bit of that.
Now, he didn't use it there, but that guy's catchphrase was, what's Zima? Which was the only thing that ad campaign got right, because no one knew what the hell it was supposed to be. But despite its flashy start, Zima soon tripped over its own clear bottle. The competition got tough in that space. It really did. Everyone and their grandma started pumping out sweet, see-through booze. And Zima couldn't shake its rep as a novelty drink, because turns out the novelty wears off pretty quickly when everyone starts realizing you're essentially the beverage equivalent of a boy band or a bubble bath. A few years in, Coors tried tossing Zima a lifeline, messing around with new flavors and rebranding attempts to shake its rep as the drink of choice for people who also own inflatable furniture. Spoiler alert, didn't work. They pulled the plug on Zima in the U.S. in 2008. Ah, but it hung around in Japan. If there's one thing Japan loves, it's another culture's table scraps. It goes to show, one country's trash is another country's treasure. And in 2017, Coors tried to pull at our nostalgic heartstrings here in America with a limited-time comeback. You know, like, remember the 90s? Zima's back. Except it was like going to a Jimmy Eat World reunion show at the state fair and realizing the middle is really just a less angsty, all the small things ripoff. It just takes some time, little girl, little and yes, to all of you sticklers out there are going to point out how wrong I am. Yeah, I'm aware that Blink 182 released All the Small Things 6 years after the middle, but it doesn't matter because I am an adherent to Nietzsche's doctrine of eternal recurrence.
Someone once told me time is a flat circle. Everything we've ever done or will do, we're gonna do over and over and over again.
Today, like Rust Cole, Zima's a ghost, haunting the aisles of retro drink discussions like this one, and it's like a perfect case study in marketing misfires and the fickle taste of booze hounds everywhere. It's a museum piece now. Another fossil from the 90s that we look back on and think, what in the actual fuck were we even doing back then? I mean, Zima was supposed to be for people who didn't like beer. What they got was a drink for people who didn't like taste. What's Zima's legacy?
I don't know. It's that drink you experimented with one time and immediately regretted.
Kind of like dating a magician.
Imagine Fiona Apple back in the day, height of her fame, criminal, all that's going on. And she wakes up next to David Blaine one morning and she's just thinking, Christ, can someone please make me disappear? Stale is one of my least favorite words in the English language. It's a real blah word, isn't it? Stale. Rhymes with fail, which nobody likes to do, and kale, which nobody but weirdos really likes to eat. I prefer an antonym to stale. That's fresh, as in Fresh Victor, a line of all-natural, clean-label cocktail mixers that really come in handy when you're having a little drinking sesh. See what I did there? Rhymes with fresh. Yeah. Anywho, Fresh Victor offers 9 unique blends with contemporary flavors designed to tantalize any palate. I love them all, but my absolute favorites are 3 citrus and mint leaf, strawberry and lemon, and cactus pear and pomegranate. All of the ingredients are fair trade sourced, there's nothing artificial, and the mixers are produced at a 100% solar-powered juicing plant with absolutely no waste. And right now, Fresh Victor is offering a funky fresh deal to What We're Drinking listeners. Simply go to freshvictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code FVDAN20. Fresh Victor Dan20. FVDAN20, you get 20% off your order. Think of all the money you'll save while also becoming the envy of all the amateur mixologists in your neighborhood. Now's the time to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market, and that's Fresh Victor.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know, if you ask me, the word legend gets bandied about far too often. In fact, I think somebody referred to me as a legend one time, and that tells you all you really need to know. Stop using that word, unless it's warranted. And in this case, I think it is. Joining me now is a woman who's often referred to as Scotch whiskey's first lady. She's a member of Whiskey Magazine's illustrious, I'm having a hard time talking today, Hall of Fame. She's in that Hall of Fame, and she's one of the most revered master blenders. She's got decades of service in the whiskey industry, and it's always great to see her. Welcome back to the show, Rachel Barry. Hi.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for that overwhelming introduction. It's too kind of you, but it's great to join you. Great to join you.
We talk about this 30 plus years you've been in the business. Can you give us a quick little timeline of how you got started and now how you've ended up and where you've ended up and who you're making whiskey for, blending whiskey for these days?
Okay, a quick snapshot. How did it start? Well, I was brought up in distilling country. I studied medicine, then chemistry. I was a hobbyist about whiskey. I used to have a little dram every week to help me study, getting to know all the distilleries of Scotland. Never thought I could work in whiskey. Just synchronicity happened. I cycled past the job on the last day it was advertised at the Scotch Whiskey Research Institute. And eureka, I found my way into the industry. I never knew I could do it. As a research scientist, I worked for 4 years under the late, great Dr. Jim Swan.
And this is at Glenmorangie, right?
No, this was Scotch Whiskey Research Institute for the whole industry.
Oh, gotcha.
And then I moved on to Glenmorangie, Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, Ardbeg. I was there for 17 years and then got a tap on the shoulder. The very first day I ever joined LinkedIn, which was weird, saying, oh, do you want to come work for Beaumont? And yes, I thought, fantastic, ready for a change, ready for some variety, spice of life.
And you wanted that hot nightlife over there on Islay. right, where it's rocking. So everybody knows Balmore is on Islay, which is an island off the west coast of Scotland, where notably where they make the peatiest scotches in the world tend to hail from that area, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. So I worked with every region in Scotland, basically, because they also worked with the Lowlands, with Auchentoshan, also with the Highlands and Speyside. And then I got another tap on the shoulder 7 years later from Brown-Forman. And I'd worked with Brown-Forman because they used to own part of Glenmorangie back in the day. So I'd had a wonderful experience working, you know, going and doing advocacy in the States with Brown-Forman. And I knew it was a great company. And I said, yes. And of course, going back home now from other parts of Scotland to the Northeast, where I was born and bred, I was born and brought up just 50 minutes from Glendronach Distillery. And I learned to glide over Benriach Distillery, and I learned to surf on the shore at Glenglassa Distillery. And they are the three distilleries I now work for. So I've left the best to last, of course, in my career, and having the best time ever bringing these three malts to the world. Obviously, most recently, I saw you, Dan, in LA.
It was a women in whiskey event. And, you know,
absolutely.
Is there a bigger supporter of women in whiskey than myself? Probably. But I like to support women in whiskey. And it really is. And you were one of the trailblazers, because let's face it, I've been doing this for a long time in terms of covering the spirits industry. And I got to tell you, when I started 20 some years ago, you didn't encounter a lot of women in distilleries. You just didn't. And you were certainly one of the trailblazers in that. And I got to figure it's pretty gratifying for you at this point. At that event you were referencing in downtown LA, there were a ton of women there and celebrating you and what you've done. Is it, how gratifying is it for you to look around now and see all of the women that are really not only working in the industry, killing it in the industry?
Yeah. I mean, it's so much fun. The industry has never been as vibrant and as fun as it is now. I must admit, you know, when I started, you know, there were times that I did feel a bit intimidated being a young woman in a room full of men in matching dark suits. I felt like the odd one out, to be honest. Whereas now it's just so diverse and so much more fun and vibrant. And it's so wonderful to see that everyone can belong. You know, there is that sense of belonging. There's enough of different types of people, different cultures, different, you know, male and female, different ages and whatnot. And mixing it up just makes for a much richer experience in whiskey, I think.
Well, wait, let's go back to, you talk about those early days where you're the only woman in the room and a bunch of guys in ducks. To what do you attribute your rise? Like, how were you able to overcome, let's face it, though, that's an obstacle, you know, how are you able to do that?
I mean, you just don't think about it because you're so focused on what you're doing. So for me, you know, I studied chemistry. I was very studious, very focused on what I was doing. I love research. So probably a combination of, you know, all the C's, curiosity, courage, creativity, you know, just kind of that's how to blaze a trail, isn't it? Be curious, always asking lots of questions, be courageous, be bold. You know, I'm an Aries. So
okay.
I don't know if that's got anything to do with it, but, you know, I'm quite driven and driven to learn, driven to make a difference. And even when I was a child, I always wanted to like be different from the crowd, so, and stand out and, you know, add my own kind of take on things and discover new ways of doing things. Or, you know, I've always got a lot of creative energy in me as well. So okay. I don't know if that makes a difference or not. It's just how I was made. And possibly that's helped along the way.
Give people some insight into how do you approach blending? How do you do your job?
How do I do my job? Oh, my God, it's difficult to sum up in a nutshell. But for me today, it's very, very intuitive, obviously, because I've been doing it for 32 years, 160,000 casks later. I kind of have got a feel for what I'm doing. It's very sensorial. So for me, it's all about literally stopping and sniffing the whiskey, really getting to know it. And the nose knows, you know, it becomes intuitive. So for me, it's a combination of having the creativity to think outside the box. It's traveling the world, getting insights about flavor from different foods, from different cask types, different, you know, whether it's, you know, a Marsala from Sicily or Australian wine or, you know, wine from Sonoma or different casks, different bourbon casks, rye casks, whatever it is. I think being curious and learning about flavor from other sectors is really important because that gives you the ideas, you know, to create something new and different. With consistency, though, that's a big part of my job. And that's like Glendronic 12-year-old, making it the same delicious symphony of flavor time and time again. You know, that's
Let's go there, Rachel. Somebody who's new to the Scotch game, and now I want to introduce them to the whiskeys that Rachel Barry is blending now. Give us the elevator pitch on the flavor profiles of the three whiskeys that you are overseeing currently.
Wonderful. Well, Glendronic is the sherry cask expert. It's all about sherry cask mastery. It's from the depth of the Valley of the Brambles, which means it's got wonderfully robust, full-bodied character, and it's like a symphony. It crescendos on your palate and leaves you with a richly rewarding finish. So a great whiskey in the evening or after dinner, that's Glendronic sherry cask matured Highland malt. We have Benriach, which is up in Speyside. I would describe it as an eclectic malt. It's a bit like being Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory because I get to experiment with smoky whiskey, with fruit style whiskey, which is the orchard fruit driven style of Benriach. I would say that it's the most multi-layered single malt you can get with so many different cask types. So, for example, our Benriach 12 is matured in port, sherry, and in bourbon casks. And that just creates this multi-layered, almost patisserie of chocolate and a little mocha coffee and some delicious forest fruit dessert.
And to go back to what you said, though, earlier, you're not doing this. This is not math tables that are, you're able to, with all your experience, sort of mix and match those flavors based on instinct and obviously you're accumulating knowledge. You're not looking at a chart going, I need 4.6% of this. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, the senses, the nose knows. So you have to look at the flavor first. For me, I'm kind of doing it the opposite way around to what a scientist would do now, because I'm starting with, okay, what do I want to achieve? I want this fountain of flavor that's going to burst on your palate. It's going to be juicy. You're going to dial up the fruit. It's going to give you these layers of sweetness, of spice, of that, you know, delicious, wonderful, delicious taste. And the way to get that is through the science, of course, once you've thought about it. But, you know, it's a bit more like being a chef or being an artist. So it's more like being you know, painting with flavor, let's say, like a chef would do. You know, you're putting a little bit of spice in, maybe a little bit of virgin oak, a little bit of more rich fruitiness in. You might put port cask in, or a sherry just going to round everything up and just dial up the intensity of flavor. So, yeah, it's kind of more like a chef or painting with flavor, I would say.
And then our final, Glenglassaugh.
Glenglassaugh is where I learned to surf as a child. So for me, Glenglassaugh is the most luscious coastal malt. So its personality is it's vibrant, it's in the present moment, it's like a free spirit. And when you taste it, you kind of get that because it kind of has rolling waves of flavor that just have no beginning or end. And it just rides on your palate like the waves. It's got this beautiful crack of sea salt and luscious tropical fruit. So very, very, very different from any other malt in Scotland because of that tropical and coastal influence. And of course, very recently, we won World Whiskey of the Year with Glenglassaugh Sandend. So that was absolutely one of my proudest moments not long after it had been released for people to really get a taste of our hidden gem was really very heartwarming.
Of all the accolades that you've received, and you've received so many, is it more about the whiskeys winning, or do you, what for your, I mean, that has got to be great, but on your personal accolades, is there one that stands out? I mean, you're keeper of the Quaish, you've got all sorts of things going, you're in various Hall of Fames. Which one is the most meaningful for you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the Hall of Fame is probably the most meaningful because, you know, I'm up on a board, number 55, and the first Lady of Scotch to get in the Hall of Fame. So for that reason, I suppose it's something which will always be there long after I'm gone, which is, you know, it's a legacy, I suppose. And I think also there's two, also getting the Doctor of Science from Edinburgh University. That was a real accolade because, you know, that was for
and science. That was back in 2018, right? You were given an honorary doctorate. Yeah.
Yeah, that was huge because, you know, Edinburgh University is such a revered university here in Scotland and in the world. And to get that accolade from the science department where I studied, was absolutely huge for me personally. So yeah, they're probably the two.
Okay. Well, you were just on a little tour of the States. I'm curious, what are some of your favorite places to visit in the US?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I love LA and I love New York. They're probably my favorite. Los Angeles and New York, I think for very, very different reasons. New York's just got such a buzz to it. I love it, and such an incredible whiskey community as well. LA, I just love the vibe. You know, I used to, when I was a child, I used to act on the stage as well.
Okay.
So I did a bit of acting, a bit of dancing, and I just love that creative vibe. So
well, Rachel, I'm involved in a movie project that's getting done. Maybe you got to cast you in this thing. You never know. Get you a part. You ready to dust off those acting chops or what?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Need to get some 80s vibes in there, though. That's my thing. 80s music's my thing. So,
did you surf when you're out here?
Not as much. I have done, but my kind of favorite thing now is just dancing. You know, whiskey dancing. That's what I love to do. But yes,
who doesn't love some whiskey and dancing? I know I do.
Whiskey and dancing. I know. My favorite thing. I've actually started thinking of dances for each of the whiskeys. So watch this space.
Watch this space. Well, listen, it's always a great pleasure to see you, and I'm glad I got to see you when you were out here in LA. The whiskeys are fantastic, and I can't wait to see, you know, what you've got coming down the pike. I know you're always experimenting with new flavors, new feelings, new styles. It's always a treat when we get a new expression from you, and I can't wait to see what's coming next. Anything you want to add to here before we go?
Well, this is a big year for Glendronach, so watch this space. It's going to be a really exciting year, and I'll definitely be back out in the States, I think, in the fall. So I'm really excited about that. I'll bring some new whiskeys with me.
Where can people find you on the social media so they know when you're coming back here?
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'm just on Instagram, and people can put my name in, Rachel Barry, and it will come up. They'll see my little face on the circle. So I'm RB Whiskey Maker on Instagram. So there you go. That's probably where they're most likely to find.
And remember, everybody, that's whiskey with no E. They can't bothered with the E over there in Scotland. There's no E.
There's no E. No, we keep it simple here.
No E. They're E-less over there. Well, listen, Rachel, great to see you. Thank you for spending time with me today and my audience. And can't wait to see you next time you're back in the States.
Yeah, I can't wait to be back there. Not long now. So looking forward to it.
And now, a word from one of our dream sponsors, Miller Lite Bowling Tournament, circa 1982.
The score's all even.
Last frame. Who's up? Rodney.
Rodney!
Hey, you kidding? It's a piece of cake.
All we need is one pin, Rodney. Yeah. Rodney. Like beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
We didn't get my turn yet. I'm going to break this time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Before I roll out of here today, I thought I'd throw in a quick drinks of the week. Drinks, drinks, drinks of the week. Drinks, drinks, drinks of the week. Drinks, drinks, drinks of the week. It's what we're drinking with Dan Duns. Drinks of the week. Jazz hands. Okay, so now this is one of my favorite things. People often ask me, what do you like to drink when you're at home? I appreciate convenience, and a brand called Night Owl has brought it, given me the convenience that I desire. Night Owl is a ready-to-drink espresso martini. Yeah, that's right. I like the espresso martini. I've talked about it before. We did a three-minute bartender about it. It is something that makes me happy. And Night Owl is doing this with real spirits. No malt liquors, no agave wines, no artificial flavors. I'm digging it. They do the original, which is a tequila espresso martini. So yeah, it's one shot of tequila, two shots of espresso, hint of vanilla for sweetness, and there's no bad shit in there. Then they've got the vodka espresso martini, and that contains vodka. Get it? See how this is working? One shot of vodka, two shots of espresso, again, vanilla, and no bad shit. It's $4.99 for a can. And the four-pack is $19.99. It's one of the better ready-mades that I've had. I really like this espresso martini. I put it over ice, and it takes me away to that special place. So this is not a sponsor. This is just a brand that I like. That's what we do on Drinks of the Week. And if you want to check it out, go to drinknightowl.com, where you can order all kinds of stuff. They got bundles, four packs, cans, maybe there's merchandise. I don't know. I'm not on the site right now, but go check it out. And that's your drinks of the week for this week. I want to thank Rachel Barry for being on the show. If you get a chance to drink scotch made by Rachel Barry, you take that chance. And I want to thank the fine folks at Zima for giving me something to open this show with. If they brought Zima back, you know what? I'd go for it again. I'm an adventurous soul like that. And finally, I want to thank you folks. You're the best. The show doesn't happen, continue to exist. We're coming up on 5 years. June will be our 5-year anniversary. And I'm going to do something special. Maybe take the month off. Talk to you later.